सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधी तमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। Yesterday I received a very interesting letter which could have been written by any of us. Though it has been written by someone whom, unfortunately, I don't know. Probably a young lady in Mauritius. The problem is universal. She says, I am angry with people around me who do what they do. Because I think what they are doing is not right. I think all of us, any of us could have written this. Yes, we are all angry with somebody or other around us, near us, who does what that person does. And we don't like what that person is doing. That's not so interesting. But, she says, I would also like to do what they are doing. Left to myself, I would also like to do what they are doing. And yet I don't like it. Why is it so? We are living in a funny world. In a world which is, according to us, full of defects. But the world wouldn't be there if I am not there. If I am not there, where would the world be? And number two, what is even more interesting, what makes evil evil? Why does something which someone else does become evil? How does it become evil? If none of us called something evil, would it be evil at all? Take for instance divorce. In Orthodox Brahmin community, in South India, divorce is unthinkable, it's terrible, terrible, terrible. And it is possible in very Orthodox, very religious, at some other community, it's quite a common thing, Muslim community for instance. There's nothing to it. I married somebody and now I find that I can't live with her. I just go to her and say three times, talak, 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 and you are finished. The whole thing is over and then we can sort of settle the financial affairs and so on in a divorce court or outside. There is nothing to it. It's just, the whole thing is over. It's accepted as normal human behavior. On the other hand, it even looks very decent. Instead of living like cats and dogs, they say under the same roof, it's more honorable to live apart. And we still could be friends. All that sounds glorious. What makes evil evil then? How does this thing suddenly become vicious, wicked, evil? So, when one bumps into a situation where it is felt, I feel, you feel, that what someone else is doing is wrong or wicked or vicious or sinful, it is good to stop and ask oneself this very simple question. If I am not here, and if I didn't consider that evil, would it still be evil, or would that evil still exist? Would it exist as evil? The other person would perhaps still be doing what he or she is doing. But without it being called evil, the caller being me, why do I consider that a recognized and recognizable evil? This is another interesting facet to the same problem. Because if I really and truly regarded that as evil, I would probably put it out of my mind. I don't want to think about it. If I don't like something utterly, and this is something which according to me is not done, it is not done, I don't care, I'm not interested in it, and I don't want to think about it. That is the case when you are convinced that some action is unworthy of a human being, and you don't even want your mind to dwell on it, to sit on it. It's quite simple. It is so horrible that you don't want, it's not a question of wasting one's time, you don't want the mind to dwell on it, to sit on it, even for one moment. It's unthinkable. It's over. He does it, he does it. But when does the mind dwell on it? Why does it go on saying, oh my God, he does so and so, or she does so and so? It's terrible. She shouldn't do it, or he shouldn't do it. Why do you go on repeating this over and over again? It is here that is a big problem. Consciously or unconsciously, the mind wants it. I want to do it, as this girl very beautifully admits. I want to do it, but I see that it is somewhat disrespectable to do it. If it was respectable, I would do it openly. But it is not so respectable. So I would like not to do it. I want to do it. I don't want to do it. And this other person has the guts to do it. I don't have the guts to do it. Right. Now, there's a problem. If the other person also does not do it, then I wouldn't miss anything. Is right? Huh? I wouldn't. Then I would think that it is not done in our society. Well, that's all. But that the other person is able to do it makes me feel small. That is, I recognize, first of all, that I want to do this myself, but I don't have the courage to do that. And she does it. And therefore, I assume that she is more courageous than I am. I want to pull that down. So that the whole thing is hypocrisy. You do not consider that an evil at all. Because, I repeat, if you consider something evil, you will not think about it. Why must I even bother my poor little mind about it? Unless it's your responsibility. If your little son or daughter does something which is considered unethical, steals something from somebody, and you would like the child not to do it again, well, that's your responsibility, you deal with it. And you might deal with it very quickly. Either way, either you turn a blind eye upon it, or you spank the child and solve the problem. Unless it is your responsibility. If you really considered something to be evil, you would not allow the mind to dwell upon it again. Recognizing that action is action. Action takes place on different levels. Action manifests on different levels. One is physical action, the other is mental action. If that person is doing it on the physical level, thinking about it, is action at mental level. And therefore there is absolutely no difference. He does it physically and I do it mentally. What's the difference? So I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't even think about it. It's something not done, it's not done. I don't want to have anything to do with it. When does one recognize the other thing as evil? When it is there within oneself. When I want to do it, and I don't have the courage. Or, there is another aspect, and that is, I don't do it, maybe even because I am incapable of doing it. I am incapable of doing it. Wine doesn't suit me. If I drink a glass of wine, I get sick. Wine doesn't suit me. I see him drinking a bottle a day. Now, I want to convert my incompetence into a virtue. I can't drink wine. It doesn't suit me. It upsets me. I want to convert that into a virtue. Yeah, see, I don't drink wine. He goes on drinking like fish. I am not worried at all about his drinking or not drinking. I want everybody to recognize that because I don't drink wine, I am somebody. But what about the other things? I may be drinking gallons of tea or coffee. What about that? If I have one defect, the other fellow has another defect. If he has one defect, I have some other defect. What is it that wants to shine, wants to be exalted? Why do I want to be exalted at all? Because surely, if I point out his defect, somebody else is going to point out my defects. It can only lead to conflict and trouble. So, is it possible for us, living in a society composed of people, each one of whom has some defect or other, it's a saying here also, that they say that if you don't have any defect at all, if you're completely pure, you'll probably evaporate or sprout wings and fly to heaven. And it is also said that some of the great Indian mystics and saints, I don't know how, if you want to believe in this, some of the very great Indian mystics and saints deliberately cultivated or sustained some defect. And when it is pointed out, the saint or his disciple or devotee responded that if he did not have that little defect, he would stop breathing. He wouldn't be an individual. I don't know. Someone liked smoking or sweets, a perpetual sweet eater. And when this was pointed out, he responded that if I don't have this one defect, my ego will disappear and I will become one with the cosmic being, which means I would not be an individual anymore. I don't know if all this is true. We have enough defects, I think. We don't have to be afraid of disintegrating or levitating or decomposing. Living in this world, in a society which is composed of individuals, each one of whom has some defect or the other, what must we do? Are we remedying the situation by brutally pointing out, you are vicious, you are vicious, you have got this vicious quality? Are we improving the situation? Can we remedy the situation? Can you possibly persuade someone, however close or dear he or she may be to you, not to do a thing which that person loves to do. Please understand that I have been in an ashram, so great master Swami Shivananda, for 17 years. Is it possible, or was it possible even for such a great master to persuade his own disciples close to him, very close to him, to do or not to do? In accordance with the master's wishes. Is it so easy? Leave alone our criticizing each other and, you know, finding fault with one another. This is waste of time. And this is wicked. Vicious waste of time. Is it possible for even such a great, was it possible for even such a great master to prevent someone from doing what he wanted to do and to persuade him to do what he did not want to do? No. Because in such a situation, something like that might have been possible only if there was obedience. And obedience is a very rare quality. Nobody wants to obey anybody else. Right? Even your own children won't obey you. You can have the stick and carrot attitude. Right? You dangle a carrot in front of me and say, Swami, please do this, you will get this carrot. Well, you may persuade me to do, or at least to go through the motions of doing what you want, ask me to do. But it is not you that I am obeying. It's the carrot that I am obeying. And believe me, as soon as the carrot is got, I am my own old self again. I would not do it again. Unless it's a double carrot. Which means I am not obeying you. Which means you are not persuading me to do what you want me to do. It's impossible. It is totally impossible. You can have your own rules and regulations and disciplines and what have you. You can build a yoga center and stick a board outside that when you enter here you should not do so and so and so and so. That already creates all sorts of unequal conflicts. You can have your own rules and regulations in your house, and you can say that, Swami, if you want to stay in my house, you should do this, do this, do this, do this. Not do this, not do this. Possible. But you are not going to change me. You cannot change me. The moment you try to do that, immediately we are going to be alienated from one another. You are suddenly going to become a stranger to me. Because from that moment onwards, I am constantly thinking of how to go through the movements of obeying you while yet having my own way. Right? I've seen this in big ashrams in India nowadays. Drinking, smoking, and drug taking prohibited within the premises. I know it goes on. Who can stop it? they protect themselves legally. That supposing the police raid the place and say, what is it? Your disciple has got so much of hashish. I say, yeah, I don't know, I put the rules. Rule, they were strictly prohibited. Drugs are strictly prohibited inside the compound, and I didn't know at all. And you can take it away. Besides protecting myself, it is not possible to persuade the other person to do or not to do according to your liking. Your own Bible tells you that even God failed in in his attempt to persuade Adam or Eve to do or not to do according to his liking. Even God could not do that. So, when we are living in this society where each one of us has some character traits, maybe good, maybe not so good. What do we do? A little story comes to mind. A little boy was inordinately fond of chocolates. He lived on chocolates. Nothing but chocolates. And the father was getting a bit worried. One day he had heard that a great yogi had come to town and he had tremendous power. Tremendous power. This man, this father took his little son to that yogi and planted him in front of the holy man and said, Swami, this boy is too fond of chocolates. I have tried and failed to persuade him to drop it. But I am sure you can do it. Please, ask him to stop it. And the Swami did not even look at the young boy, but told the father, come after 15 days, I'll tell you. And father and son went away. And the father was intrigued, but he thought maybe the Swami has to do some sort of ceremonial. He's going to meditate and get some more power. To influence my child. They returned after 15 days and the Swami straight looked at him and said, don't take chocolate, Girat. And that boy said, yes, Swami. And it is over. The father and son went home and from that moment the boy didn't touch chocolate. This is a miracle. A couple of days later, the father went alone to the holy man with gifts and so on of thanksgiving and then asked him, I appreciate your influence and your miracle, but please tell me, why didn't you do this 15 days ago? Why did you ask me to come back? And the Swami said, for a very simple reason. I was myself addicted to chocolates. I was myself addicted to chocolate. And if I had told your son, don't eat chocolate at that time, those words would have had no power at all to touch him. So, as soon as you went away, I picked up all the chocolates that I had and dumped them in the toilet. Then I decided I am not going to eat chocolate hereafter. That way, I built up the power necessary, the energy necessary, to tell him, I have stopped it, you also can stop. If we find that that people are doing what they are doing, and we don't like it. It is when we don't like it, we call that action evil. I don't know if there is a thing called absolute evil. Maybe. So, the first thing that a sincere seeker after truth would do would be to look within and see what is it that regards this action as evil. It may be undesirable. It may lead to unpleasant consequences, may lead to unpleasant consequences. But what is evil? Why do I regard this as evil? It is I who regard this as evil, and it becomes evil only then. Otherwise it is not. I don't know. If I do not regard it as evil, what it is, only God knows. Not leave it at that. Unless, again, I repeat, it is your responsibility. So, this is the first thing. Where it is not specifically my responsibility, I recognize that the perception of evil is in me. Whether that action is good or evil, I see it as evil. It's important that that should be recognized and rectified. Can I see it immediately that seeing it as evil is an action which takes place in me? If that is disposed of, what happens? It is pointed out sometimes that there is danger that you will acquire into it and you will also become wicked. You may not become wicked, because the impulse that regarded that external action as evil is still there within you. You did not like it, whether you yourself wanted to do it or you were unable to do it, you did not like it. Your mind, your heart said, this is undesirable. So, you are unlikely to fall into the same trap. But first, to look within and to remove the idea that that person or that action is evil, wicked. Recognizing that this thought, which is a mental action, arises in me. It is not my responsibility, so I avoid it. Even where it is my responsibility, even where it is my responsibility, like in the case of a son or a child or a student, what do I do? If before admonishing the other person, you look within and try to see within yourself, it's possible that you have the same problem, or it is possible you have a similar problem. That he drinks whiskey and I drink tea. We are both addicted to something or the other. Before telling him off, if it is possible for you to discipline yourself, either you will develop forbearance or you will develop the power to change him. Either of these might. Either you might suddenly realize, my God, it's so difficult for me to reduce the consumption of tea, and I am asking him to give up drinking alcohol altogether. What nonsense. I become a bit more patient. And that patience might be rewarded by his cooperation, even without my persuading him. Or I might try to experiment. All right, I want him to stop. He is my son or he is my student. I want him to stop drinking alcohol. In the meantime, I recognize that I have another addiction, or the same addiction, another addiction. I try to remove that, and while removing that, I gain a certain inner strength or shakti or power. To which he responds easily. In that mood, I am able to persuade him to see that if I have done this, why can't you do that? I am giving him a challenge now. I have done this, why can't you do the other one? Same thing, go on, try. Then there is an inspiration, a challenge, and it is possible that the other person might respond. All this merely to persuade one person to do just one small thing. It's not so easy. It is not so easy at all to persuade someone else to do or not to do in accordance with our ideals. This is something almost impossible. Each person has to arrive at this point by oneself. Each person, each one of us, has to arrive at that point by one's own effort, by one's own understanding. If you even entertain the idea for one single moment that by talking like this or by laying down do's and don'ts, I am going to spiritually uplift and elevate and inspire a whole mass of people. It's a very foolish idea. Nobody has been able to do it. Nobody. Absolutely nobody. Can consciousness be raised? Yes, it's possible. It's possible only if we cooperate with one another. Which means you are also doing exactly what I am doing. That is what the word cooperate means. Right? You are doing exactly what I am doing. Then why should I take the credit for that maya? The credit doesn't belong to me at all. If you and I are cooperating, the credit doesn't belong to me at all. It is, we are doing exactly the same thing together. And that is a very rare phenomenon. It's not common at all. It is possible, as we are talking like this, it's possible that you and I might suddenly find ourselves on the same wavelength. And when we find ourselves on the same wavelength, we may then be able to take a few steps together. It may not be of interest to you, but then, just fun. In Hindu wedding ceremonies, there is one item which is considered vital, that is called Saptapadi. Saptapadi is that is the boy and the girl take 7 steps together. At each step they promise. They make some promises. They make take some vows. The wife says something, the girl says something, the boy says something. It's a matter of, you know, we'll hang together. We'll love each other. We'll love our children. We'll support the society. We'll adore God. You know, there are some 7 rules. And of course, the Indian or Hindu idea is that when, once they take those 7 steps, they have become husband and wife, man and wife, forever and ever and ever. And so what I am going to say is a complete misrepresentation of this ceremony. So please don't take it as official. I am going to suggest that possibly if you and I fall in love with each other and we love each other like nobody, no other pair in the world did, and you and I found ourselves on exactly the same wavelength, and from there on we started taking marching together, that harmony would last only for 7 steps. Afterwards you go here, I go there. Only for 7 days, or until we take 7 steps, probably that harmony would last. Then the other thing starts. Because we are not Siamese twins. Nobody. No 2 people in the world are Siamese twins. Whether it is mother and daughter, father and son, husband and wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, nobody, nothing. In this world, the human being is peculiarly free. Free not in the sense of the animals are free too, but the human being is peculiarly free inasmuch as that the human being feels that freedom can only be expressed in rebellion. That freedom, according to the human being, can only be expressed in rebellion, in saying no, in saying no, I won't do it. Who are you to tell me? To deal with this, we have invented all sorts of things. Right from the famous heaven and hell. I don't know if the heaven and hell exist, but they may merely be another form of the stick and the carrot. If you do this, you'll go to hell. And if you do this, you'll come to heaven with me. It's a silly, silly attitude. It hasn't worked. My problem is not that it may be true or may not be true, or it is silly or it is clever. But my response is, in spite of the gruesome pictures that we have painted of hell and the tremendously interesting pictures we have painted of heaven, it hasn't worked. Sooner or later, we introduce also palliatives. That's how the human nature works. You know, if the father spanks the child goes to the mother. If the mother spanks the child, my child goes to the father. There are two people, at least. So, if one priest says, you have done that, you'll go to hell. I quickly go to somebody else and pay him some money or something like that and say, Father, what shall we do? He says, never mind, God is all forgiving. He has found a remedy. The same thing, the characteristic of the human mind is that it is rebellious. If someone says yes, I say no. If someone says no, I say yes. You make God appear to be very just and very a punishing and rewarding God. Now you say, no, we don't accept it at all. I start a new sect. And according to me, God is all love. When that goes on and on and on and on and it becomes too much, then I invent some other God who is neither just nor unjust, neither loving nor non-completely unloving. He's a mixture of all this. So, what do we do when we recognize that all these things have failed? What do? We recognize the freedom of the spirit, the freedom of the human spirit. And without interfering with this freedom, is it possible for me to find my own freedom? Without interfering with your freedom, without even trying to force my will upon you, is it possible for me to free myself from this psychological complication, psychological problem of seeing something as evil, of seeing something as undesirable, of even wishing to reform society. When that wish itself is dropped, then you have discovered your freedom. All problems are solved instantly. Because then you don't blame anyone anymore for anything. And you have learned how to live in harmony with all, in total harmony with everybody, adjusting yourself to all conditions and circumstances, and you are happy, blissful. Oh, asato ma satgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma mrtamgamaya. Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate.